I don't know where to start. So there's all sorts of like cliches on the internet and all these, you know, cliche Christians with things to help you out when you're feeling stressed that are not helpful at all. Like, just let go and let God. That does not work. And, you know, God only gives you as much as you can handle. You must be really strong. And that's not helpful either. You know, the Bible doesn't say worry about it or plan for it. The Bible says give it up to God. Also, not helpful. So, I don't really know why I'm up here, what I'm going to say, other than when Ryan was talking earlier about, you know, is your mind cluttered and you're having a hard time letting go and connecting, and yep, that's where I am. So to say that life is stressful right now would be a little bit of an understatement. I have 4 days left before the end of the school year, which you would think would be like super relieving. Yay, summer break. But I don't really get the whole summer off, so it's not super relieving. And I'm making my summer to-do list and making my list of all of the open positions in our corporation that haven't been filled yet, and wondering if I'm going to have another summer like last summer where I'm picking up the slack for other people who aren't there. So a little overwhelming. And then there's just, you know, life beyond that, with trying to finish my next degree as quickly as I can and spend as much time with my kids as I can. And, you know, they're getting old enough, they don't really want to spend time with me anyway. And, you know, and then, of course, everybody is always stressed about money. I had some of those days this week of like, hey, you got $6,000 to spare because that's what this is going to cost you. So that's, you know, that's super helpful as well. So all of that is happening, and I can't let that go and just be present. And I find myself, you know, in this time where I'm supposed to be letting go of all of that and just in this place of worship, that I'm singing for a minute or I'm following the prayer for a minute, and then I drift back to, oh, I gotta remember to send that email to so-and-so tomorrow morning, and I need to make a list of this, and oh, Isaac's got camp and I didn't do his health forms yet, and oh, Harrison's glasses broke for the second time yesterday and I really should get him an eye appointment that's 6 weeks overdue, and all of these things happen, and then the guilt sets in. The guilt of, oh, I was supposed to be worshiping. I was supposed to be connecting and thoughtful and spiritual and oh, well, maybe I'd be able to do that if I was around more often. And then all of that sets in. And then I didn't even take communion this morning because I didn't feel connected, and I didn't feel like taking communion was going to make me feel connected. And I felt guilty that I shouldn't take communion if I didn't feel it, but I shouldn't not take communion because I didn't feel it. So there's not really a point to all of this, except I appreciate that sometimes I manage to show up on just the right Sunday, and Ryan says something that I go, oh. Yeah, that's me. So I guess that's really it, is just I know that I'm not alone in that. I appreciate Ryan's sentiments that make me feel like maybe I'm not the only one, but I'm going to keep working on it. That's it.
Actually, it's just you. I was just saying. Oh, was my mic on when I said that? Oh, man, thank you. And that's so real, right? I mean, that is so what it feels like, especially, like, I watch Jesse and Caitlin back there, and they're, like, worshiping like this with one hand and one eye on the mixer and one eye worshiping, and it's just, that's what it feels like, trying to be pulled a million different directions. Yeah, Mike, you coming up?
Yep.
All right.
Hey. So, yeah, so I was like, should this be an open mic or should I just talk to Deanne afterwards? Because it's almost like, this is like, anyway. But I feel like this is an important thing that I learned at one point and that I still have to remind myself, and like maybe even today have to remind myself. And so maybe other people need to hear it too. So basically boils down to the difference between guilt and shame. And that, see, guilt is what you do, feeling bad about what you've done. And shame is feeling like you are what you've done. Shame is being ashamed of who you are. And guilt sometimes is good and sometimes is bad. Like sometimes you screwed up and you should feel guilty. And sometimes you feel guilty for no reason. And then but shame, on the other hand, is there's never any valid reason for shame, because shame is, especially when they're tied together, which they usually are, shame is when you take what you've done and you think, that's who I am. Like, I am the person who screws up. I am a failure. I'm a screw up. Or whatever the thing is that you would be guilty about. Like, you internalize it, like, that's your identity now, and now I'm ashamed of being that person. And I've had to deal with that a lot, like, because I screw up a lot. And I don't know. I don't really have much else to say, except it just occurred to me, like, that the communion table, though, I don't know. I haven't had time to, like, I don't have 3 points of a sermon about why this is true, but I feel like this is true, that the communion table is about who you are and not what you've done. And that I'm not, like, this is kind of awkward because I keep making eye contact, and it's as if, like, I know what you did.
Deanna, okay? Deanna, would you mind standing up during this part of the...
But it's not even like what you did. Like, you're talking, the things that you feel guilty about are not even like we know you murdered someone, right? It's not like that. You know, you're not a crack dealer, right? But whatever it is that you feel guilty about, even if they're small and stupid, the point that I'm trying to say is that the communion table, I feel like, is about who you are and not about what you've done. It's a, like, for all of us, like, it's a time to come and participate and say, like, in spite of what I've done, let me be reminded that that's not who I am. Let me be reminded that you died, that you were broken and you bled and you defeated death in order to say, I am not the thing that I am guilty about. And so I guess my point, that, like, what I'm saying is, I think we should. I always take communion afterwards because I'm always playing. So, like, anybody who missed communion, you can always take communion again if you feel like, man, I missed it. So if it's just me and Deanna taking communion afterwards, I guess you all know why. But. But my point is that the table is, I mean, it's there, right? It's never not there. And that's the point, is to come and be reminded that who you are is who Christ said you are. And it's okay to come and participate in that, even when you just can't, like, you feel like there's this magical, mystical moment, and you feel like you owe it to it to be, like, fully present and, like, it's the blood and the body and I'm transcendent right now. But, like, just like sometimes we sing songs and you're not really into it, but you sing it anyway because you're like, you're trying to make your body participate so then your spirit will catch up. Like, communion is the same way. Like, it's okay to do it anyway. And usually when I do it anyway, when I just do it and I'm not, my spirit isn't there, but I make my body, whether it's sing a song or pray or take communion, I find afterwards that, like, oh, my spirit caught up. Like, now I am there. So I guess that was a little more, like, preachy than usual, but I don't know. I felt like it should be said.
Awesome. Mic drops a smackdown. That was awesome. Communion table's about who you are, not what you've done. Nate? Volunteering, clapping for Nate.
So this is going to start out as, like, a bummer, and then it's going to feel better, I promise. So stick with me. Yeah. I feel like whenever we have one of these, like, one of the most frequent topics that comes up is money, careers, that kind of thing, which makes sense when you think about it. If you work a 40-hour-a-week job, that's, like, a third of every day, Monday through Friday, of what you're doing, and then another third is sleeping. So it kind of goes forward in our lives. So what I want to talk about today is, for those of you that don't know what's going on with me, my job's kind of going downhill. I got an email from the guy at the top of the chain, corporate president, saying that due to lack of money in the company, we're going to have to, first off, lay off all the supervisors. We're going to cut 5 hours off of everybody's week. So that guy has since left and gone to Florida with the same company. So it's kind of signs aren't looking great here. At the same time, our kids start childcare this month. So that's not really the trend line you want to see, where expenses go up at the same time your income goes down. This is where it gets positive. All right, I told you it was going to get positive. I keep getting this overwhelming sense, though, that this is all for the best, because I've been thinking about this, and I'm like, Nate, you don't like your job anyway. So I've had these thoughts consistently for months now, maybe I'll apply at this place, or maybe I'll do that. And it's one of those things where just having the thought is enough to get you through the day, and then you don't actually do it. But I think that this was the kick in the pants I needed to be all right, do it, go do something else, go find something that's more of a calling for you, something that's more what you're looking for. So I've been putting my resume out there, and there's no guarantees yet. I did get a call back for an interview with the number one place that I'd love to work. So hopefully that goes well. Pray for me there. But I guess what I wanted to get at is, like I said, there's this overwhelming sense that all of this is, in the short term, yeah, it's easy to fall into despair when you look at this. But it's something that I think is probably for the best. I can just feel this kind of force moving through me. Maybe that's a coping mechanism. Maybe that's God. Let's hope for the latter. But I think that it's pushing me towards this direction to do something bigger with my life. And since I'm the kind of nerd that finds meaning in comic books, this kind of thing, this came up in, that memories feature on Facebook yesterday, of a comic called Sandman. And the premise of this comic is this guy that is the personification of dreaming. And this is from the first issue, and it's this guy who's about to start in a play, and he's really nervous about it. It's his first leading role. So he has this dream where he's running away from the theater, and he's climbing a cliff and stuff, doing anything he can to get away from that. And dream appears to him, and he talks about how, how sometimes you have the falling dream and sometimes you have the flying dream, same basic action, but two very different dreams. And he talks about climbing the cliff and how sometimes it's very difficult to climb and sometimes it can be terrifying. And sometimes you fail and sometimes you fall off, but it's better to climb anyway, because sometimes when you fall, you fly. And that's just kind of how I'm trying to contextualize everything right now. So I'm going to get off here before I get too rambly and let other people talk.
Thanks. This is just messing with me. It's just not working. All right, forget it. I was back in Children's Church when it was a month and a half ago when Ryan was talking about after Moses had killed the Roman and he ran, just listening to that story and kind of bouncing off of what Nate was talking about, how even though he ran from his failures, something beautiful happened, and he found contentment, and his mind and his spirituality was healed. Like he was able to move on and find something beautiful, even running, and finding that time of healing, even though that failure was still looming over his shoulders. And I thought, like, how has that applied to my life recently? And I got to tell you, like, Mike and I have stopped trying having babies. Like, I'm done. And when I had ever thought about that, I definitely thought it would be a source of failure. I thought it would be a source of, like, anger. But I'm surprisingly content. and, like, I'm noticing things better and tasting food better and seeing colors more beautifully. And, like, I just feel like I'm in that time of healing and in the unknown of I don't know if we ever will have another one. And right now we've just paused. And we may never go back to it, but I have a funny story, which, and it's kind of selfish, and I'm sorry for parents if I offend you if I say this, but we were eating out, and my mom and dad had John, and we were sitting there, and all of a sudden, like, all of the children in the entire restaurant started crying, like, wow, just bawling their eyes out, and it hit me right then, oh my gosh, Mike, we never have to deal with that again. And that's the first selfish mom thing I've ever said in my entire married life. The whole 10 years that the entire time I've basically been pregnant, hoping for a child. And finally, when I allowed myself to stop and allowed myself to embrace the void, I really have found something beautiful. And so I'm just saying, allow that failure to be there, all of those things of fears and doubts. And as even if you're running away, you will find something beautiful. That's it.
Awesome. Okay, so two questions. Number one, is that what inspired the song "I Am So Free"? Is that where you got
that? No.
Okay. Number two, did this happen at family night? Whenever there was that,
no.
Okay. All right. Just as long as it wasn't those two, it's okay.
No.
I think I saw a hand over here. Oh.
We've got several.
Oh, it's Wes. Oh, no, you might like.
Mom's coming, then Wes, then Marissa.
Oh, yes.
Well, I've been. It's so unusual that this happens to me so often. Whatever Ryan's preaching about or what we're teaching in kids' church, it seems to creep up in my life. But doubts, yes, I've had many. But one thing I've never doubted was that there's heaven. One of my favorite verses, Ryan and the other boys bought me a picture with this beautiful verse about let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God and believe also in me. And in my Father's house, there are many mansions. And I can just hear Jesus saying, you're my friends. If this weren't true, I would have told you. So that to me, just that secured that faith that there is a heaven. But as you know, my mother died. And I don't know why. Because I know Dad's in heaven, but I just didn't think I was going to see her again. And I slept for about 3 days. And but my brother called me, my younger brother, who's had such a troubled life. He's so dear to me because he was like my baby when he was born. I was 10 years old and got to take care of him a lot. But he's really been through so many trials. And it would take the rest of the day to tell you all the things he's done. But he called me and said, he kept hemhawing around. He wouldn't get to the point. And I was waiting because we were going to have a meeting. And he said, Sheila, you know that you seem kind of down about Mom. I said, I know. I know it was best that she's gone. She couldn't live forever and she was in pain. But he said, well, I just want you to know that you're going to see her again. And I thought, yeah, that's what we tell. That's what I tell Caleb. I tell, you know, because he went with us every week to see Grandma. But he said, whew, got that done. I said, why, what's the matter? And he said, God has been nagging me and nagging me to call you and tell you. And I said, and that just, oh, I just got chills. He would care enough to, you know, that was just so beautiful. I know I'll see her. But to lighten it up a little bit, Caleb, I've got a Caleb story. So we took Caleb to the graveyard to see if Mom's plaques were on her stone and all. He was talking about all those headstones at the cemetery. And I said, he wanted to know what they were. And I said, that's where, those are all people who have died. And I said, you know what that means, don't you? Thinking he'd say, yeah, they're all in heaven with Jesus. And he said, yeah, they're all zombies. Oh. But there's one other thing I wanted to say. I am just so filled with gratitude to have this church and have all of you. And it's all because of him. He's been so faithful to his vision and has made, I can't think of a person who's come in here that hasn't touched their lives. I think about Chloe and Devin and so many people that, Sherry and I can't even name them all now. The Spiel Dinners, every one of them, their lives have been changed because of this. It's not big, and I'm frustrated that it's excruciating to me to see him worry and try so hard. But I've just never felt anything else like it. I've been to quite a few churches in my day, but this is special, and I think we all know it. But thank you, Lenny.
All right, I'll try not to take too long, but like the same thing I've been dealing with is like sacrifice all for the past, I don't know, like 11 months. And for some reason, anybody ever tell you something and you just don't believe it? You're like, that guy's full of crap. You know, because everybody's like, kids are expensive. And you're like, you're an idiot. And then like, you're like, kids are expensive. So... So it's not that I'm giving up alcohol because I'm concerned about my liver. It's because I can't afford it. I'm not giving up tobacco because I'm concerned about, you know, the cancer risks or all the bad things it does to me. It's just because I can't afford it. And I'm not giving up, like, you know, energy drinks in the morning because I'm concerned about my heart health. It's just I'm broke. So it's like all these things that my wife worries about, I'm like, meh. But we have concerns for different reasons. It's like there's different lessons that we can learn through sacrifice. It's like what is truly important to us. It's and where do we really realize that we can make sacrifices in different places where it's not really that big of a deal to sacrifice. Like we were at the grocery store the other day and my wife grabbed like this $5 dozen of eggs because they're like non-GMO, like range free, cage free, like, you know, dollar bill eggs. And I'm like, you know, that's nice. I can get behind something like that. But if I ain't got $5 to spend on energy drinks in the morning, I mean, like we're going to grab the $1.69 eggs over there. That's just, you know, like, but it just, that's not that big of a deal, but it's things that we worry about. We have to think about and worry about and be concerned about the things that we have to give up, but we don't focus on, like, what's the better things? It's like, yeah, I can't afford my $5 eggs. Yeah, I can't afford my cigars or my booze. Or, yeah, I don't really have time to even cut my grass, but there's so much more that's to life that we're so scared to give up the small things that we think are big things. And it's like, I get to watch a sunset every morning, or a sunrise every morning, and a sunset in the evening, and I get to spend my time with my family, at least the time that I have. You know, I have to work, and unfortunately, I have to work like 60 hours a week because, not because I want to, because I'm broke. But I'm not broke. It's like, you know, we have more than we need. We have everything that we need, and we just have to realize that we have it. We stress out about, like, these things, and, like, my wife's like, I'm developing an ulcer. It's like, because it's not that important. I mean, don't sweat the small stuff. It's like, yes, there are things that we have to give up, but it's not... We think it's a big deal at the time, like if we have to give up a parent. And I'm not saying that the loss of your mother's not critical. I mean, it's a big thing, but things are better. Things are still good. I mean, we run from all the things, like our responsibilities that we think we have, that we have to be true to. But sometimes you have to sacrifice your beliefs, your values, just because out of necessity, you know, your pursuit of children, the things that you have the most passion for in life. Like, I got 2 race cars just sitting in my garage. It was the thing that drove me. And now I'm like, I don't care. It's like, but I still got life. I mean, like, I can run from all the things that I used to think were important and still try and chase after them, but they're not really that important. But I got my family here, so you guys are awesome. I'm kind of rambling now. I'll let this other guy go ahead and talk. But this person, too. So we still got time, so somebody else get up here and stop me from rambling. But it's awesome. Like, I'm glad that I get to make the sacrifices. I'm glad that I have the strength to make the sacrifices. And I'm glad that I learn from the sacrifices that I have to make so that I can be a better person and friend and father. So your sacrifices that you make are making you better people.
Yeah, Marissa, before Marissa goes, guys, I did not know things were getting so critical. We're going to have to take up a special offering for the Beer and Tobacco Fund because this is we're at critical levels, apparently.
Okay. I don't know why things are so hard. Like, and I don't just mean at home, although I know I've talked about that, especially the past couple open mics about just having very young children. But, well, like some of you know, I've been doing research about like adult literacy programs in our county, which I define as like basic. If you can't read your mail, if you can't read the medication labels on your thing, like that kind of literacy, like being able to function in the world. And in our county of 117,000 people, there are no programs. And in Blackford, Jay, Randolph, and I think one other county, there are no programs. So some total of about 250,000 people. And if you look at national statistics that say about 10 to 14% of people struggle with reading in some way as adults, that's the population of Kokomo, you know, that have absolutely no access to services, no access to improving their lives, no option to really, to even like fill out a job application or be able to read to their kids or help them with their homework because nothing exists. And I just keep looking and looking and hoping that there's just some magic rock I haven't looked under, that there's like, I'm going to find this perfect program that's serving all these people, because I don't want to do it. Because everyone that I've talked to, because I drove to Indianapolis and I talked to the guy from Indy Reads, who does their adult literacy program. I've talked to everyone in this county. I have talked to everyone in all the surrounding counties to see if there's anything, and there's just nothing. And I know that, you know, reading is obviously a passion of mine, but it goes beyond my passion, because if you look at it, like 70% of people are in prison read below a fourth grade level, and people can't read their medications, so they end up in the emergency room because they take the wrong dose. And so this isn't just like a passion thing or, you know, a higher reading literacy. This is people not able to survive and not able to get the help that they need to do that. And I wish to God that I could just overlook it, you know, because nobody would blame me. You know, I've got 2 young children, and I've got a job where I'm already helping people, and I've got a writing career that's going pretty well that I'm trying to launch, and nobody would fault me if I said I'm too tired and I don't have to do it. But the more I look and I find nothing, and the more I talk to people who say I wish I could do something, but I'm overwhelmed. and listening to Ryan talk about Moses, and I read this book yesterday about half of which I agreed with and half of which I vehemently disagree with, but in the part that I agreed with, it's a lot of the service stuff, and it said, you know, what would happen if people just stopped asking, what can I spare to make the world better, and what will it take, and changing that question. Because what it will take is that it doesn't matter that I'm tired, and it doesn't matter that I have too much to do anyway, and it doesn't matter that we don't have enough money. I just have to do it. And I have to figure out how to do something for these, you know, 10,000 people in my county that have no access to a better life. And it's like, I'm all about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, but if you don't give them boots in the first place, then what are you condemning them to? And there's no money for programs like this. People don't care about poor adults. And I know that that's not politically correct, but they don't. Because it's easy to give a little kid a book and say, and picture this child and their beautiful future and all the wonderful things they're going to do when they grow up knowing how to read. But it's harder to look at the guy with no teeth who's working at the gas station and has probably been in prison and say, you know what, I'm going to throw $5,000 behind that guy. You know, it's not an easy pitch. And all the programs that I've talked to existing say that there's a pie that everyone for these literacy programs are applying to, and it's shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and everybody's competing for the same funds. It's hard to get volunteers. I mean, I know from experience, I coordinate volunteers. It's hard to get volunteers to come and keep coming. It's hard to get the population you're trying to get come and keep coming, because not being able to read is such a high shame thing. And there's, you know, there's no money again. And I just really picked a winner of a project to throw myself behind that I have no time to do, because nobody seems to be able to figure out that I just can't. I can't look away. And I just keep thinking about this guy that I helped at when I worked at the library a couple years ago. He came in and Maring Hunt Library, if you're not familiar, it's sort of the neighborhood library, but it's within two blocks of two homeless shelters. And so we would get a lot of the transient people. And I sat down and I helped this gentleman one day. And I was half-assing it, honestly. I just wanted to go home. And I didn't want to deal with him and all his problems. And the fact that he couldn't use a computer, he couldn't figure out how to hold a mouse, and he couldn't read really, so he couldn't use a keyboard to type it. So I sat there for 3 hours, and I helped him apply for this job at Olive Garden Online. And the whole time, you know, I was helping him, and I was being encouraging, but like I said, I was half-assing it, so in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, what hope does this guy really have to get a job here? So I did it, and then I didn't see him, and then, you know, like 3 months later, I saw this guy, and it was around Christmas, and he had a job with the Salvation Army. He was a bell ringer, and he stopped me. Like, he remembered me, this me who was not even really doing that great of a job, and he stopped me, and he thanked me, and he said, thank you so much for taking the time to sit with me and do that, and you have no idea how much that meant, because we don't care about poor adults. We just say, but sorry. But that meant so much to him that 6 months after I had spent a couple hours with him, not trying that hard, he remembered me. And he remembered that I had been kind to him. So even 6 months later, he probably still couldn't read, but he remembered that somebody cared about him. And I just think about how many people that I pass on the street every day, that I drive by, who are in the same situation, and no cares, because no one has the time and no one has the money and no one has the resources, but I just have to figure it out. I just have to do it, and I wish I didn't. Because that's what it will take. It's not what I can spare, but it's what it will take. So I don't know. If you have any ideas for a magical program that's going to solve all my problems, maybe we can talk. But yeah, I just feel like it should be easier, but it's not. It's just what it requires. So I don't really have a point. That's just what's been with me lately. So.
I just feel like it should be easier, but it's not. So that's, and by the way, that's me every Monday right there. I know that's funny, but there's a lot of things I don't know. I don't know why when we know it should be easier, but it's not. But one thing of which I'm absolutely convinced is that when each of us can sit in that chair, in this chair, with that type of passion and pursue that type of dream, this church, we'll never have to worry about this place again. If we can be a place where we can foster those types of dreams, and that's why my idea exists, and I've already talked about Marissa, we're going to figure out something, you know? We're going to figure out some way to make this dream a reality, and then we're going to figure out a way to make another dream reality, and maybe yours, maybe your dream is next. But I'm just telling you, when we can get to the place where, as a church, where we can be that place, a petri dish where dreams happen and can take root, I just watch out. I had someone who told me they used to attend this church, they don't attend anymore, and there's a bit large part of me that's glad. But I was talking about somebody who I was wanting to come be a part of dialogue, and they're like, she's never coming back here. And, you know, it was like, you might as well punch me in the face with an anvil, you know. And then they said, there's nothing in Muncie for them. There's nothing in Dialogue for them, is exactly what she said. And usually it's Marissa, the one that, you know, is getting on people. Just imagine how mad she would have been in this environment. But I'm just telling you, listen, we're not here because it's easy. We're here because it's beautiful, because it's good. And we're going to figure it out. So that inspired me. We're going to figure this out. I know there was somebody. Was it John? Yeah. Let's go. Let's let John come. And you want to have to introduce yourself, or Brock. I don't know if you want to introduce him. Introduce yourself. Brock's like, introduce yourself, sucker. Help me welcome John.
I'm honored that you guys are letting me up here and speak. I'm John, by the way. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. I was raised in church my whole life. I met Brock in about 17 years ago. Same last name as the family, could be related. But back to the point, I had a moment back in 2010. I lost my hope in believing in God. Like, I was hardcore atheist for like 4 years. And what it's like to be atheist, you literally feel like there's really no God at all. And any question you can think of, you would think of that question that any atheist person would ask. Why this? Why that? Why blah, 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 blah. But anyways, I was down on my luck on a lot of things, just everything. Never really thought there was good moments at all for the past 4 years. And I would just get mad at God, saying, if you're such a real God, you suppose you exist. Why, blah, 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 just screaming at him. One time, I dealt with a supervisor in 2014, skipping all the details, you know, and he threatened to fire me because I didn't want to be around some hazard exposed material. And I was really at a point where I'm just like, okay, I am totally done. I am not going to go back to church anymore. If you really exist, God, you really suck. I said that. I would say that, and just I was screaming at him, and I called him a deadbeat father in the sky. I was just very rude to him up above. I would just look in the sky and say, you call yourself a real God? What kind of loving God are you to put some Christian supervisors who say they are that would just threaten to fire me for this? What kind of God are you? And then what happened, it was September 2014, 4 days later, and I'm still mad at God. I'm still angry. You know, just I was in a hostile environment of people, drug dealers, blah, et cetera. And I was at that point where I said, after 4 years, I said, this is it. I'm completely through to a point that there really is no God. I would cuss him out, whatever you name it. If you met an atheist person that is so angry about an existed God, if they have that, for having that attitude, you would really, that was me. I was one of them kind of people that really had that experience where I'm like, I would make fun of it as much as I could. I had a bunch of atheist Facebook friends. We would make fun of the Bible. We would make fun of everything about it. Well, a Monday rolls around. I was in downtown Cincinnati doing a delivery, and some guy he stopped me. He wanted to talk to me. And I looked at him and said, what's your question? And he's like, well, there's some things that's been placed in my heart I really wanted to share with you. And I'm looking at him, and I'm sarcastic about things like, all right, what's on your mind? That's how I said it, exactly like that. I was just, whatever, you know? And then he's like, well, I just want to let you know that, you know, you've been dealing with some situations that you really have been mad at God. You've really been angry with him lately, and in the past times, you totally gave up on him. And then he said, and I know lately another thing that's been placed in my heart to share with you, you've been dealing with some corrupt supervisors below you. And I'm just looking at this guy like, okay, can you tell me what's going on? I did. I looked at this guy. He was just some random stranger. It was at 7 in the morning in September. I went to my boss and said, what do you do if there's asbestos and it's exposed and it's not in good condition? And he's like, well, you could do it or quit your job. That was his attitude. And then I finally got, that's when I exploded at God, blah, blah, blah. He told you that story. Well, then next thing you know, then that's when this guy, this stranger, I've never met him. I forgot to ask him his name. I ain't seen the guy. I've never seen him in his face. And after that incident in September when that guy came up to me, I quit the job in March 2015. And put it to you this way, I couldn't find this guy anywhere. He was nowhere to be seen. Gone. He was just gone. Like, he wasn't a person that was dealing with us. He was nowhere to be seen at 7 a.m. I mean, if he was even around us, he would have had to hide above the ceiling or something hearing this. That's all I could say. that was basically it, and it woke me up to think, okay, this is just nuts. How can this stranger tell me that lately I was dealing with corrupt situations under a supervisor? That's what blew me away. But that's all I had to say.
Thanks for letting me speak.
Thank you. Hey, again, how did you guys know each other? Same church growing up?
Yes.
We lived in Brookville.
Oh, okay.
And they used to go.
So Church on Fire, is that the church or the you?
Church on Fire. And I went there for 20 years this October, but I backslid in those 4 years of moments. I literally had no interest. I thought for the rest of my life that I was never going to have hope that there something was going to tell me that there really was a God. Mm-hmm. But I just hope and understand that, you know, if you guys are dealing with the moments where you are just down on your luck, you're at a moment where you feel like, wow, there's really no God. Just think about the people that God can send to you. Like, wow, God above is like, this guy's an atheist. Oh, this person's down on his luck. Man, maybe I need to send somebody gifted to talk to that person. That was me. Wow. I can't even find the guy still.
That's awesome.
He was hard. I mean, if it was just a coincidence, like I said, he would have had to hide above the drop ceiling.
He's sneaky.
He would have had to be that sneaky. I mean, nobody's going to work that extra hard to make it seem like it was a coincidence.
Right.
Can't happen.
John, thanks for sharing, man.
Thanks for
appreciate
letting
it.
Us share. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.